So hello and welcome everybody to the December Microsoft IT Live Online event. Microsoft IT Live Online is a monthly series that's hosted by Microsoft IT, and where we have subject matters like you, Jeremy, speaking about the hottest industry topics, and they're also the most popular requested topics. And we're pleased to have a lot of you join in today and hope this is going to be a very valuable session for you as well. So today's topic is how Microsoft IT uses System Center 2012 Configuration Manager in the data center. We have a full hour planned, in fact, and we'll have the last 20 minutes set aside for questions. And if you have any questions during the discussion, please feel free to type it in the IM window, and we'll talk about those at the end of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And we'll also have a feedback opportunity towards the end, where there will be a survey provided, and we'd love to hear your feedback. This is also being recorded, so you will actually have the recording in a couple of weeks. And there is also additional resources at the end of the presentation, which will actually show you how you can stay connected with the IT experts. So with that, Jeremy, I know you are a senior service engineer in Microsoft IT. Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself?
Sure, thank you.
And walk us through.
Yeah, absolutely. So happy to be here. And like I said, yes, I work in Microsoft IT in the manageability team, which we run a lot of the different System Center products. So Operations Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, and then Config Manager, which we're going to be talking about today.
Okay.
And so just a high-level look at what we're going to go through. We're going to start kind of give you a breakdown of who we are, sort of our organization and kind of the strategies that we take. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about sort of the technical parts of Config Manager and how we use it, and how we use it to patch and provide some other services for the data center. And then to wrap up with any questions that come up.
Okay.
So like I said, it's always good to start at the top and talk about our organization and sort of how we're made up. At the very top of the stack is security. Right? They're not just security for the data center, they're security globally at Microsoft. I mean, they protect our, set policies for our desktops here, as well as the infrastructure, the server infrastructure. Sort of below them, they inform our IT leadership team, tell us, on a monthly basis, as the patches come out, they're deciding the risk, that if it's something we need to deploy to the data center. And so they inform the IT leadership, so that they can know sort of what the target population is or how much risk we've got in our environment. And then sitting on below them is the process units or business units or the actual server owners and servers, as we go. And they do care about security. It's sort of everybody's responsibility, but they're also concerned with, the uptime of their app and the cost of running their services and those kind of things. And then kind of at the bottom, operations, where I sit, we kind of try to put a method together to balance, keeping everybody happy. Like keep the organization secure with as much uptime as we can. So let's move on to the next slide here. So talking a little more deeper about the actual tools and the strategies that we use here. As you can see on here, Config Manager accounts for a large portion of the tool set that we use for patching. I mean, it covers at least 70% on a monthly basis. It's not to say it couldn't do more. It's certainly something that we just found that on a month over month as we're measuring it, that's kind of about what we can expect from it. As you can see, there's a couple other areas where it goes where server owners end up getting their patches from. There's still a big chunk of that are manually patched. It's about 20-something percent. And then, Orchestrator is another product that we use, another System Center product that we found is very helpful in kind of, taking care of some of these complex patching situations that we run into, clusters and some of those kind of things. Yeah. So we'll talk more about, dive into these a little bit more later, but kind of our main goals are listed there on the slide. We're trying to, always be flexible. We really want security to be kind of our number one priority, but we want to make sure that server owners have a bunch of different methods to be able to get patches installed and keep their uptime and their services running. At the same time, we're trying to lower costs, so that manual patching slice there, we really want to get that down, move as much as we can into automation. Because it's expensive to actually to do both, and the whole time we're trying to maintain security. So now that we've kind of told you about who we are as an organization and sort of the tools we use, let's dive into Config Manager. and look at the actual how the data center is broken up. So we do have, you know, this is more of a traditional data center, so it's not like your, you know, what you might see in the product groups or the external, you know, like the big web-facing things like MSN or Bing or some of those where there's quite a bit of, you know, web farms and like that. We're more of a traditional data center. We've got a lot of servers that host internal apps, you know, stuff that would, like our payroll or HR or those kind of things. Some of it does serve external facing services, but for the most part, we're more the standard infrastructure what you'd find in any IT shop. So every month, there, you know, there's always adding servers, but right now the count's around 36-something thousand servers, so a pretty big footprint that we have to manage to keep going. A lot of them are located here regionally in Puget Sound. There's, you know, about a little over 2-3/4 of them are located regionally. Mm-hmm. Some of them are actually, around the Puget Sound area. We do have some in the extranet as well, which presents a little bit of an extra challenge for us because it's a bit of a, you know, there's we have to deal with firewall concerns or ACLs and permissions and those kind of things that just present an extra bit of challenge. But you know, we do have to support globally some servers that are about 3,000 of them in other regions. You know, so it does play in later when we're talking about patching and patching on time zones and schedules and those kind of things. And then on the right side of the slide, you see our service KPIs. So, you know, we try to maintain our agent health because it's important for us to, you know, actually meet our targets for patching. And we try to get that to 98% on a, you know, daily basis. We're measuring that. And what we're actually looking for is not only is the agent installed, but, you know, is it actually doing something? You know, is it communicating back and forth with the actual infrastructure? We have a couple of test packages that we run on a daily basis to just simulate activity and make sure that the machines are, you know, getting policy and sending things back and forth. Not only is it just actually installed, but is it functioning? That's kind of what we're looking for. So we also give it a little bit of a grace period. So we have, you know, these policies are set for 24 hours. We give them 3 days or so before we call it, you know, unhealthy and actually go remediate it. And then at the bottom of the slide, our patch compliance target, 95%. That's what we go after on a monthly basis. And traditionally, our normal patch cycle is 19 days. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we go for, you know. And I'll dive more into like the actual breakdown of the schedule of that in the next few slides. So it's quite a bit, you know, on that scale. It's really a lot of work to go through and do to keep everything that healthy and actually patch to that level.
Now, just on this slide, I mean, you know, if you look at it, there's about 30,000 in the Puget Sound area, and yep, the regions have about 3,000. So is there a particular reason why it is separated that way?
No, I mean, that's just where the servers are located. You know, some are in, we have a number of different regional sort of areas. They're located in a few concentrated data centers in, like, Singapore and Dublin are kind of our major ones. So that's just, you know, we do have to serve global, mm-hmm, serve a global economy here for our services. Yeah, and then so diving into what the actual config manager infrastructure looks like. Mm-hmm. On the left side, you see we just recently, within the last maybe year and a half, migrated to Config Manager 2012. Mm-hmm. We're running the R2 version. I believe it's R2 SP1 now, but the, you know, we, as you can see in the migration from 2007, we were actually able to reduce our footprint a little bit and actually complete the virtualization. It was 90%, made it to, you know, everything's virtual now. But one of the big points that we have changed was that we went from a number of different sites into a single primary site. Okay. And so that allowed us to remove some complexity from any site-to-site replication issues that we might run into, or, you know, just condensing our down to a single primary site, you know, really allowed us to just kind of reduce a lot of the administrative overhead too. You know, so instead of having sites out in the regions, what we do is we locate just what the clients need to talk to. So the distribution points, the management points, the things where the agents are going to be talking to. We put some of those out in the regions. We put some out in the extranet and any places that clients need to get to it. But for like site assignment and everything, it's really nice because everything just goes to one place. There's one database, and it made it quite a bit of difference.
So anything you want to share in terms of just the consolidation, any kind of challenges that you had with consolidating everything to a single site?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we did have challenges just getting, you know, these like out in our extranet space, like actually, you know, opening up the proper firewall ACLs and all those kind of things, making sure that we weren't going to hit scale problems. But Config Manager 2012, at the scale we're doing, it's plenty fine. You know, we didn't actually really need to go too big on it. All right, so let's move on. So that's a little bit about what we do and sort of the infrastructure. Let's talk about the services. So everything really starts at the bottom with asset inventory. That's on a daily basis where the Config Manager agent is going to collect, you know, from these servers what their hardware was running on them, the software installed on them, any kind of compliance data will all be brought back. And we use that to, we feed that back into the business in a bunch of different ways, and I'll talk about a few of them later. But, you know, it's really kind of all these services on top of it are really built on inventory. It's an important piece of Config Manager. We also use Config Manager to maintain our antivirus signatures, so the system center, the endpoint protection agent. So we deploy the signatures through there. We can get reports back on malware activity or anything like that. And it's actually, because of Config Manager 2012's the role-based control, we were actually able to let the security team into our console. You know, so, you know, they're actually doing a lot of managing the policies, doing the deployments. And we just didn't have to, you know, it wasn't possible in the previous version, so now it's something that's really nice. We kind of coexist. We give them just the amount of permissions they need. They can do all the work and then take all the reporting data from it. We don't have to ship it to them or do anything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then on top of that, settings management is another feature we use. It was called desired configuration management in previous versions. And what it allows you to do is take build a template of settings that you want to look at. These would be, you know, file versions or anything you want to evaluate on locally on a server. It'll do that. It'll bring back a compliance bit. So it's something to, you know, we use to monitor for configuration drift. And it's something we can do reports on. We can actually do remediation on. So it's a good service for server owners to use. And then on top of that is really the software distribution areas. So if our problem management team, for example, notices that, you know, they're getting a spike in tickets because of a, you know, something that's fixed by a hotfix, for example, you know, they may come to our team and say, we'd like to deploy this hotfix to the data center so we can package it up, use Config Manager, deploy it to the servers, you know, within the patch cycle. And then last is security patch deployments, which kind of, you know, what we're going to talk a lot about. Again, the information security team is really the driver of this. They own the setting the risk and you know, evaluating the policies and then telling us the timelines as well. So typically it's a 19-day timeline. We do have, if there's an exploit in the wild or some really, really high-risk patch, we can do this immediate deployment, which is done in 24 to 48 hours. And as you might imagine, that really, that's very disruptive. But, you know, so it's...
That would be.
Yeah, when we reboot every data center server within, you know, a couple of days, it's kind of a lot. But it's only done maybe, hopefully, less than once or twice a year if we have to.
So how many times, in your experience, how many times have you actually done that?
It's only a handful. We really, you know, it's very situational. Sometimes it's, you know, it's just, it depends on the patch, and a lot of times they come out sort of mid-cycle, and you really just kind of have to scramble for it, but wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't, you know, required. The risk doesn't warrant it. So I mentioned the asset inventory. You know, we do have a CMDB external to Config Manager that we use, and, you know, it has a record for every server that's in there, along with, like, the details of who owns it, you know, what data center does it live in, and some of those kind of things. You know, from that, we, to run our service, we take a few pieces. We take the environment type, which would be, is this a dev test UAT, you know, pre-production, production kind of box? So something that we can use in determining how we're going to patch it. We take the maintenance window data, which is stored in the CMDB. So the server owner will go in and choose a maintenance window for the server. It's something that, you know, we use for patching. And then a flag that we call the self-patch flag. And I'll explain more about that, and, you know, when we kind of get into it. But Then I mentioned asset inventory is collected by Config Manager, so we actually put data back into the CMDB as well. So more of the dynamic stuff, like, you know, we can't really discover who owns the box, but we can, you know, tell you which, that it's actually online and that, you know, it's in this domain and here's the hardware we found on it. So it's kind of one of those circular references where, you know, records can go into the CMDB, but they don't really become valid until Config Manager's discovered the agent. You know, so it's kind of one of those ways we keep it in check that this is actually a live server. Okay. And so let's look a little deeper into the actual patch schedule. So I mentioned we do 19 days is our standard patching cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, over the years it's been longer. We've started, you know, as, I think we've gone as high as 21, 28 days, and, you know, as low as like 14, and kind of settled on 19. It's you know, kind of a evolving process. We've had all these services I'm going to talk about really has evolved over the years. We didn't start day one with all this sort of functionality. It's been iterative over, you know, number of years, and this is kind of, we've been working on a 19-day schedule now for at least 3 or 4 years now, so it seems to be fit well.
So that's the standard at this point.
Correct. Yeah, and that's pretty fast for a company this size, and, you know, to do every month we're doing, you know, rebooting our data center in that amount of time. So everything starts on Patch Tuesday, which is the second Tuesday of the month. That's when the list of patches come out. The security team will deliver us what's required. So they'll, you know, whatever releases, they'll do the risk analysis and say, okay, these are the required patches for this month. And that's when our team goes into action. So we'll take the list that they gave us. We'll start building the Config Manager packages. We authorize the updates on the WSS servers directly, just in case server owners want to patch, you know, using another set of tools. We want people just to get, you know, I mentioned flexibility is kind of one of our things too. We want people to have the ability to use any different mechanism they want to patch their servers. And then, you know, once that's all set up, the next few days we use is what we call our automation preview. So we will send out test packages, kind of, we won't actually do any patching, but kind of just testing readiness. So, you know, for Config Manager, we're making sure, watching to make sure our agent health doesn't decline. For Orchestrator, we're sending out some dummy packages just to make sure that the systems are communicating back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, Orchestrator is a nice sort of secondary patching solution because it's agentless, mm-hmm. so we don't have to really keep anything up, but we still want to make sure that we can actually communicate with the box before we have to actually, you know, before it becomes time to patch it. Mm-hmm. And then once we are done with that, we move into the first sort of where we're actually landing patches on a machine, which we call smoke test. And that's really, we take any of the pre-production machines. So dev test, UAT, you know, kind of any of those are automatically put into this first weekend of patching. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we use, you know, the Config Manager and a little bit of Orchestrator kind of deploy out to these pre-production machines so that server owners can get a good, you know, see if there's any compatibility issues with the patches, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you know, it's important that we really interact with the server owners. Like, they're the ones choosing the maintenance windows and are going to have to tell us if there's a problem with the patches, because, like, if you look back at the beginning, you know, operations, we're not the ones actually running the servers. Mm-hmm. You know, you may be a server owner and know more about what's going on your box than I do. So we just have to give you a lot of different tools and options to tell us when the best time to patch it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to give us feedback if there's problems on there. Right. Yeah, and then so once the smoke test is kind of done, we move, the whole next week is production patching. We use the maintenance window selected in the CMDB. There are 2-hour maintenance windows typically. There's like 6 or so a day, and then those are spread across the entire week. So, you know, a lot of different choices for, you know, as a server owner. I mean, and it's, you know, we have to give a lot of different options because there's different services that may require different maintenance periods.
Right. It's not like everything is on a Friday evening.
No.
Everybody has to stay up. Okay.
Yeah. If you didn't choose a maintenance window, we have a default maintenance window, which is on the weekend, you know, like a Saturday or Sunday at midnight, one of those kind of things. Right. So, but yeah, there are some teams, like, say, our backup team, mm-hmm. who, you know, does all their services run overnight. So they want to choose like a noon maintenance window or something. They want to be patched in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Or let's say, you know, you're a server owner that owns a cluster there, and you want to make sure that your server nodes are spread across different maintenance windows so that your cluster doesn't, like, all go down at the same time. Yeah. Kind of defeats the purpose of it.
But is it all also based on criticality. I mean, other conditions which says these critical servers can only be patched at a certain time versus the others can, even amongst the production servers.
You know, I guess that would be left up to the application owner. You know, if that's something that your business, you know, you have that defined in your business, you could spread, you know, your servers across the maintenance windows however you wanted to. You know, maybe you do a cluster node every day or something so that you know you're not, like, within a few hours affecting change all over the place. You know, you might want to spread your risk out a little bit. But really, it'd be up to you, you know, there. Or let's say maybe you owned a server, like a service that had a web front end and a database in the back. You want to make sure those be in, like, the same maintenance window so that you're not taking it offline twice. You know, so just the important part is, like, as the config manager admins, we don't know how these things go together. And so it's kind of, we need to rely on the server owners to describe the best time to patch their servers. Orchestrator instance is a little more geared towards being custom like that. Like, you could actually do a little bit more describing of how you want your patches to go on these boxes in that kind of manner. Yeah, and then so that took us all the way through production patching. The self-patch flag that I mentioned earlier is if you checked that in the database in the config in the CMDB, we won't actually patch your box during this week. So you've kind of told us, hey, I want to patch my own server, or maybe it doesn't work for you that week. Mm-hmm. And so if you check that, we'll leave you out of automation until what comes after that is the force patch week. So, you know, if you did check that flag and you actually, maybe you installed some of the patches or you actually didn't install the patches, Config Manager will come again inside your maintenance window, but will come and actually try to install the patches, either you missed or you didn't get to.
Oh, so it actually is, so within the time period of 19 days, you have these different phases, and
correct,
then towards the end is the force patch.
Yeah, so we give you a week of, but you get 1 week that you can opt out of. The last week is force patch week up till the deadline. But again, we don't do anything in the data center that's not done inside a maintenance window. So, even on the force patch, we will use your maintenance window.
Okay.
But to remain flexible, we do have a sort of a way that you could talk to the security team and actually file for an extension. Like, let's say you had a critical business process running and it just, you can't be interrupted
like
this month.
Month-end.
Correct, yeah.
Or something,
or you're trying to, trying to ship something and you've got builds running and it can't be interrupted. Yeah. You could work with the security team to get an extension. Mm-hmm. You provide business justification. They're pretty heavily reviewed to make sure you're not missing, multiple patches. You're only missing this month's patch and those kind of things. And you'll get a short-term extension. And so if that happens, we have automation behind this that runs every few hours going to Config Manager and truing up what's in the CMDB, making sure that there. So if you got an extension, we'd remove you from targeting until it expires. But just another way to be sort of, we have to remain flexible to the business, but security is kind of there is a deadline that we're trying to hit. So we start out kind of nice and then, becomes forceful at the end. So picking a maintenance window works for most servers, big percentage of the data center. That's, pretty much all I need. Just give me a maintenance window. I'll put my server in there and Config Manager will patch it. There's a lot of times, there's other situations where what we call complex patching, where, some of those things I was talking about, like with clusters, or like the virtual machine host is a great example where, we manage those servers, but they, have servers running inside of them. They're hosting other servers, and so they need a little bit more care. We can't just put them in a maintenance window where other servers might be too. So I've kind of listed some of the challenges that we run into in the middle of the slide and then sort of our solutions for them on the side. And so one of the first ones is Config Manager really treats these as just individual objects. It doesn't really understand the relationship between, especially if it's, if it's discoverable, something like a cluster, maybe we could pick that up. But, if you have an app and you have a server that has ties to a bunch of different apps, there's no way we're going to be able to really discover that information. And as so far as Config Manager knows, they're just single entities. Yeah, and so, the maintenance windows actually help with that, allowing you to kind of tell us how you want to map these things out to have maintenance performed on them. But that's not always enough. Some of the way we actually need to install the patches might need to be customized as well. One of our solutions there is the task sequence engine, which I'll show you a little bit more about on the next slide. And then there's still kind of another bucket of servers where they're just there's uniqueness going on where they can't, you know, maybe there's not a good time every month. There's not a single time every month where I can reboot your servers. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where we've built up the other sort of more high cost solutions for, you know, Orchestrator or having them manually patched, just because it's something it's not always the case that the machine can't be automated. It's just that there's no good time. There's no one single time that you can tell me that every month I can do this. You know, I have to go talk to my downstream customers or something like that. So we have a couple solutions. We do have a PowerShell module that we can give out to folks that will, you know, allow them to, like, whenever maybe you have some automation already built in to shut down your servers and make them ready to patch, and then you know, you can just call whenever you're ready. You can call our services, and they'll at least, you'll get the same config manager experience patching. So, you know, there won't be a chance that you'll miss a patch, and config manager will come and patch it anyway.
So you actually give out the scripts to the server owners?
Correct. Yeah, we have the ability. It's a module they can import, maybe put it folded into their existing automation. You know, and then the orchestrator solution is a little more hands-on too. The server owners can work with a team and kind of build a custom solution for patching, and then hopefully it's just a scheduling thing, you know, next time. But yeah, it's a little more flexibility. Something we could have done in Config Manager as well. They're both extensible, you know, capable products. Orchestrator gives us a little bit more reuse on, you know, some of the content. Maybe, you know, some of the whatever is going to work for your servers might work for someone else's too, and we can kind of borrow it between them. But yeah, out of all the patching, the complex patching is sort of the toughest area, you know, where we spend most of our resources. You know, but it's that standard 80-20 kind of rule, right?
So what percentage would you say is?
Definitely, you know, at least 20 to 30%. I mean, just, we do have, you know, quite a bit of complex machines in here. And as you can kind of see from, like, the, you know, way back at the beginning, you know, Config Manager can easily cover 70% of our workload pretty well. It's just that these other ones, for whatever reason, it's not always that they can't be automated. Sometimes it's a process thing, you know, it's not always technical, but they're definitely complex for us. So moving on, I'm going to just give you a look at how you might use the task sequence engine. If you're not familiar with it, it's a way to build kind of an orchestration package. So if you look on the left-hand side of the slide there, all those little folders and steps there are sequential, and we get kind of a gated logic point at each one. So we can do something, we can check the return and decide whether we continue, we fail, we do stuff like that. So it allows you to build kind of a nice flow, if you will, for packaging. And we've adopted that to use for patching by breaking it up into kind of four major areas. So pre-patching, right? We've just woken up inside your maintenance window. You know, we need to make your server ready for patching. And so what we do there is kind of run a couple of scripts to see if the box is, you know, maybe has a pending reboot or something like that. Like maybe you installed some software and didn't actually, you know, complete the restart. We want to take care of any of that stuff before we even try to install the patches. You know, trying to get to the point where we have the highest success rate of the patches being installed. So, you know, your server may reboot before we even get to patching. But then, you know, once we get into patching, we patch the box twice. So the first time will be, you know, the config manager agent knows what patches it needs, and, you know, it can handle if it actually requests a reboot. So once the first pass is done, you know, we run it again just to make sure that we didn't, like, install a service pack or a patch that now requires, you know, another patch on top of it. And the whole goal of all of this is to really make your server ready for production at the end. You know, it's a two-hour maintenance window. We certainly won't use all 2 hours, but, you know, we may reboot your server three or four times, you know, however much it actually needs it. But by the end of it, it's going to be done and
so
back in there.
So this has all the steps in place?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and then we also have spots we've left, because we do manage other agents, like the other system center agents, you know, we left ourselves a spot for optional software. So this would be like any of those hotfixes I mentioned, or, you know, if we have to actually do something with our other agents in there, we want to, you know, make sure that we're doing everything inside your maintenance window. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different work can go on. And then post-patching, if we ran something in the beginning, we want to make sure we don't leave your server with a pending reboot, for example. We want to leave it, you know, better than we found it, I guess. But ready for production to go back in. So one other thing I'd like to share is kind of how we've actually set up our software update groups. So these would be the actual patch bits themselves and how we replicate those within our config manager infrastructure. What we found best is that for the whatever current calendar year we're in, we like to keep a single package for each month. So it keeps the packages nice and small so that we can actually deploy them pretty fast and we don't have to be stuck behind a gigantic like years worth of patches in one package just waiting for the bits at the end to get added. Mm-hmm. Anything beyond the current year, we will actually bundle up into yearly packages. It's kind of a way for us to save sort of replication and like getting these, it's all about sort of condensing the space and getting it to the clients as fast as possible. Yeah, but it's certainly a setup that we does take a little bit of work as the calendar changes, but you set it up once and then it's good for the year.
So it usually has the years full of patches.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And that in itself can actually get pretty big. It's gigs worth of data, and luckily we only have to support servers in one language. We don't have to support multiple different things, or else it can take up a lot of space. So let's talk a little about compliance reporting. Okay. So after every one of those patch cycle phases for like smoke test or the production patching, we come in on a Monday and we'll run a report that will give us data, to see how the patch cycle went. And so what we do is we take anything that was actually in scope for that patch cycle, so anything that was in for smoke test, we'll take a look at those and see, if they're compliant. We really don't pay much attention to those, whether you patched it yourself or used one of our services or automation patched it. We don't really care too much about that for this report. But if you're non-compliant, we break you into two sort of different high-level categories. The first being non-compliant systems that we really couldn't even try on, right? These are machines that, like, maybe you got a deadline extension, or maybe your agent is not functioning correctly. These are already ones that we believe have remediation in place, so we don't spend a lot of time on those at the end of the cycle.
So when someone requests an exception, and do you see that in the report? I think you said yes.
Yep.
How do you get that information back? And is someone actually inputting that in from their system still?
Yeah, so if you were looking to get like an extension, we'd direct you to the security team, and you'd work with them, fill out all the paperwork. And once they approve it, we have a feed from their database that we take in. So we'll know you've got an extension. That allows us to kind of categorize it as, first of all, take it out of the maintenance window so we don't patch you, and then also something that we can take out of our denominator here.
Okay.
Because that's really what we're trying to do is, the second bucket is where we spend most of our time, which is what we call our missed opportunities. So these would be systems that, like, your server went through the maintenance window, still came out the other side missing patches. And so, it could be for a number of reasons. Maybe the patch reported a failure. Maybe the tool itself didn't work correctly. Any number of things could have happened.
What percentage do you see that?
Yeah, great question. So on average, around 7% is kind of what we have to chase after the end of each patch cycle. It really does depend on the patch cycle itself and, how many patches were in there, what kinds of patches. Mm-hmm. That's why it does keep patching is kind of interesting, because every month's like a snowflake. Everything's different. There's some more complex patches that we see a higher failure rate for. Mm-hmm. But in general, that's kind of what we're chasing after usually is anywhere 7, maybe 10% at the highest.
Okay.
But that's where we will spend most of our time, like, triaging and trying to get data, trying to figure out what happened. We may, at this time, contact server owners to get additional downtime. We may come and say, hey, look, we need to get compliant. We need to reboot your server again or go in and figure out what happened on your box. But, at that point, we'll always be in contact and, we won't do anything in the data center that's not in the maintenance window or that doesn't have server approval, server owner approval.
You contact them, work with them, but
right, and hopefully trying to understand what's going on or what happened, so that the next time automation runs, we have a higher chance of success. So just to wrap up the patch management topic, let's go through a couple of the best practices. Patching your pre-production machines first seems like it's a good way to get your make sure that your apps are going to be okay. It's also a way we patch our infrastructure first, just to make sure that the actual patching tools are working and functioning. It's important to review the success of those just to make sure that you know nothing bad did happen. Kind of give you a good sort of barometer for how you're gonna, you know, how your the rest of your patch cycle might go. Enforcement is definitely another key area. So, you know, we do have a monthly deadline. I've talked to a number of customers where they really don't have, you know, they don't take as rigid of an approach with their patching. They, you know, the application owners kind of drive more of when they can patch and, you know, may apply patches every 6 months or something like that. You know, that's we've found a lot of success in keeping risk and security, you know, compliance high and by actually having an enforceable deadline. And, you know, we do, again, mention the extension process a couple of times. That's certainly, you know, it does, we do need to have that in there, but it should be something that is maintained. I mean, don't just, you know, we do have longer term extensions. So let's say like your app isn't working, isn't compatible with a patch and, you know, it's maybe an app you bought from a third party or something. You know, we can get a longer term extension if we need to, but those are more tightly managed and kind of more making sure you're working to do something to fix it. You know, it's really, there's no like, I don't want to install this patch ever. It's more of a like, let's work to make sure it.
And so that's a good point. In fact, there could be applications that need to be remediated before it can actually work with the
correct
patch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so there could be, and then the extension, it depends on the situation, but the extension will be tailored to fit that, and then security will be sort of managing it, you know, from that point.
Right, and actually you have a very good bullet point up here. Who is?
Yeah, so the... Yeah, baselining is kind of something else to keep an eye on because it's, you know, you may, you know, we pay attention to it looking ahead in the next, you know, 6 months to a year, which products are going to go end of life. Because mm-hmm. Once they go end of life, there's no more patches for them. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to hit the next service pack. And, you know, we don't want to be caught in a situation where we have, you know, thousands of these, you know, SQL servers that need upgrading now mm-hmm. Without informing, giving the application owners, you know, time to actually do some testing. Yeah, it's something that once it, you know, so we'll plan ahead and try to work with people and get them to upgrade early, and then we can go, you know, we can add it to Config Manager and add the service pack in and, you know, just part of the patch cycle.
And does it still use the same maintenance window, the
yep.
same time?
And that's where the task sequence engine would, like, install the service pack first, then the next time when it comes back, it'll install whatever patches you actually needed.
Okay.
But yeah, we try not to put too many of those in there unless it's really necessary.
Right.
Yeah, and then optimization is kind of a, you know, automation is really another key to our success. A lot of the stuff I mentioned is really driven by automation, just that our size, we can't, you know, there's no way we could tackle all this manually mm-hmm. without problems. So let's talk a little bit about service automation. You know, most of what we have built is a combination of PowerShell and SQL. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, Config Manager, you can program it in almost any language. It's very extensible. PowerShell just seemed to be one of the easiest ones. And then SQL is, you know, provides us a lot of the actual business logic mm-hmm. layer. Like that, you know, calendar I showed a few slides back for the patch cycle, that's all actually built out of SQL. So, you know, you can, because when you're choosing a maintenance window, you're choosing a generic one. So you're choosing, you know, Saturday, midnight to 2 a.m. But when it comes time to, you know that it's production patching, we didn't know that translate that to an actual calendar date.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, you know, SQL to be able to find Patch Tuesday, apply our patch cycle logic, and then it really drives a lot of our automation and reporting to be able to know where we are in the patch cycle. Or if we actually have to change our patch cycle for, you know, occasionally at the end of the year or any of those kind of things, we will, you know, we'll may skip a patch cycle or, you know, or something like that. If we're gonna change it, maybe move force patch out a week. You know.
So what happens when there are events? I mean, there are certain times that we want to actually lock down the servers.
Correct.
And
yeah.
So we have maintenance windows that come in that time frame.
Yeah.
Exceptions to it.
We will either. It depends on what sort of freeze it is. Like if it's really just kind of like a financial, you know, like when we come up on the end of the fiscal year or something, you know, we can use the extension process just to lock down a small portion of machines.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be something more globally, we may evaluate it and maybe actually just skip a patch cycle and then fold the rest of them into the next patch cycle. But a lot of those decisions are made at the security level, you know, how much risk they want to assume for there. Yeah, and then we do have some stuff for, you know, actually keeping our agents healthy. But for the most part, we use the built-in health service that came with Config Manager 2012. It was kind of a new feature. It's you know, installed with the agent. It's got a bunch of baseline checks that it's doing, and in some cases doing repairs for you. So it actually really kind of helps keep our agent health up. For anything that doesn't, you know, falls outside of Config Manager, maybe if it's like something on the server itself, that's where we've got some PowerShell scripts to run on against the unhealthy boxes to gather more data and possibly remediate them. So this is kind of a look at how we might actually use that data. So what we would, you know, we've got the scripts that will go out and get data about the server, maybe what kind of problems you're having on the box. You know, but once we bring all that back, we've actually, you know, over time kind of built up a ranking system of problems. So it allows us to quickly see and actually work on the what might be the most important problem, right? So if we're looking at your server and it's failing to get an agent installed, but really it's just because it's out of disk space or you know, has a network issue or something like that, you know, we would have that ranked higher than any of the other problems, and so it's, you know, it saves us from just jumping in looking in the wrong spot, mm-hmm. kind of, you know. And so maybe by fixing the disk space, we fixed a number of different problems and maybe fixed all of them. But if not, you know, just then it would be re-ranked with whatever the next highest one is. And so as we find problems, we kind of add to this list. It's a good way also to know to figure out how big of a problem it is. So maybe I'm on your server and it's got some weird error I've never seen before, but out of all of our unhealthy machines, you know, that's the only one or something. It's, you know, but it lets us know that if it's really a significant problem. So where do we focus on, you know, first? So one of the other services that we provide is a reporting, you know, because Config Manager does bring back a lot of data. You know, and I mentioned we take data from other sources like that CMDB, or, you know, the security team will give us some feeds from different information sources. What we do is we aggregate all that into our reporting server, and then it allows us to be able to provide, you know, business data back to, you know, some of the, if like our stay current team, for example, who wants to know, you know, who wants to look ahead and see how many of these machines are going to go end of life for a service pack or something. You know, we can provide them a report they can run. We can provide them access to a data query, however they want to consume the data.
So this is a solution that's built specifically for reporting?
Correct. Oh, well, I mean, it's really just, you know, our CMDB is external to Config Manager, mm-hmm. We can't just really use the Config Manager database as sort of the authoritative source. Mm-hmm. We need to join that against the, you know, CMDB and a couple other places. So mm-hmm. so really the easiest way to do that was to kind of just make Config Manager a data source itself. You know, so.
And is this also the same place where the reports that we talked about earlier, which showed about compliance?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so any of that will be run out of, you know, we pretty much do everything out of our reporting server. And then any automation or tools will interact with Config Manager as they need to. So one of the other services that I mentioned is the settings management, which was desired Config Management. It allows you to build a template of things you want to check on a server. So, you know, if you want to check, you know, you can, it's a combination of things. You could have registry queries, your WMI queries, registry lookups, file versions, all the stuff. You could bundle it into a single template and have the server evaluate it and tell you, you know, I'm compliant, I'm not compliant for that. And the way we rolled that out internally is a few different ways. So one being global, right? So say you're on the hardware engineering team and you want to make sure that every Windows server has some boot settings that are correct. Mm-hmm. So you come to our team, we can build a template, have every server evaluate it and, you know, give you the data back on it. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we can actually remediate it too. So part of 2012 Config Manager was that not only could I say what data I want to collect, I could tell you that if I find this data wrong, fix it or run this script or do the, you know, take some remediation action. So globally is one way, but dynamic, so let's say you're on the SQL team and you come and say, look, I want to make sure that every SQL server is, you know, set a particular way or has a couple of particular settings. Mm-hmm. So instead of having every server do it, we can just have, you know, only SQL servers evaluate that thing. And then role-based targeting is even more granular. So, you know, your server owner, you could come and say, I have these two web servers. that I want to make sure they have identical config files on them. So you know, we can build the template, target it just your particular machines, and then either remediate it or just give you a report for data. So a different way, you know, at all the different levels of services we can kind of provide. And then we also use it for deploying out those hot fixes. And so if the problem management team said we need to deploy this, instead of asking every server if they need this hot fix, it's something we can build more targeted. You know, we know this hot fix only goes to a certain platform. We can only have those servers really evaluate it and then use it to install and actually do the deployments on. And then so finally, we do work with the product group as well. We have a lot of interaction points going back to them. We file bugs, we'll file design change requests, either against, whatever their current product or if we're evaluating a newer version. We can get hot fixes from them if we need to, but it's really about sort of, we do kind of have recurring meetings with the product group too, to share kind of our experience with the product and hear their product direction and kind of make sure we're staying in sync with that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully through all that, you learn quite a bit about how our services operate and what we do here.
That's definitely great information. And again, I just want to remind everyone on the call, if you have questions, feel free to ask them in the IM window. And if you're thinking of your questions, feel free to do so. But I actually have a couple of questions in the meantime. So we talked a lot about, software updates, software distribution. How about Windows updates? Why don't we just directly use Windows updates? You're getting the same updates right there, right?
True. And the Config Manager agent itself is actually using Windows Update. Under the hood, it's using the same catalog, the same agent, actually. So when it goes to patch, it hands it over to the Windows Update agent and uses the, so it's really nice because you are using the same bits there. Mm-hmm. And we can deploy anything that's in the Windows Update catalog.
But you don't let server owners just go ahead and do a Windows Update?
They could if they wanted to. That's part of why we authorize the patches there too, so that they're able to, kind of look at it as no matter what tool you use, we want you to get the same answer. Mm-hmm. So if that's your tool of choice, that's great. We just really want to be, we really want just to hit our compliance deadline by the end of the month. If you didn't do it correctly, Config Manager will come behind and kind of finish it. But it's where using Windows Update or using one of our patching scripts that we can give you would be the best because we're using the same tool. If you're, there's some server owners maybe that just want to log on and install the patches they think they need. It's patching's kind of gotten complex, so it's tough to make sure you do it all correctly.
But in case, what you described was a service that's available, so that's standardized, it's available, it's a best practice, they know what is coming and when.
Yeah.
So you talked again a lot about processes, tools. What about teams? How large is your team?
Oh, yeah, good question. Yeah, it's fairly small for, maybe three service engineers like myself, and we do have a couple of support folks in Hyderabad that kind of also work on not just our agent, not just the Config Manager agent, but that also support our Ops Manager platform or Virtual Machine Manager agents too. And then I'm still not really sure about the size of the team for Orchestrator. I think it's around three or four people as well. Mm-hmm. And then they have a little bit of a support team too. So it's definitely, for the amount of servers we're doing, that's not a lot of people.
It's a very small team. So it's also that team that develops the scripts?
For Orchestrator, yeah, the runbooks, they actually do a lot more, spend a lot more time working. That's definitely one of the areas we need to lower cost in. It's more expensive to actually dedicate the teams to run that. Mm-hmm. It's part of what we're doing that is at least to get people back into some form of automation. Mm-hmm. And even though it may be more expensive because we're throwing sort of people at it to do it, we can start understanding what's going on in the, and how to move them to a fully automated solution. So it's kind of, instead of letting the server owners themselves, like yourself, go out and just do this, I'm sure you got better things to do every month than go patch your box. So it would be one of those, we want to understand why and try to help get automated, get you a little closer to a fully automated solution.
Okay. And one last question on, you talked about, again, a standardized process, but how about these, year-ends, month-end transactions and things like that?
Yeah.
What goes on behind that?
Yeah, a lot of that, I think we talked about it a little bit, where we've got areas in place where we can, if the risk is big enough, end up like stopping the patch cycle, or maybe only install some of the patches that are the most critical. Then for other areas, you know, we do have the extension process where we can take, you know, if it's really just year end and these are all concerning the financial servers, you know, that may only be hundreds of servers and we don't need to stop, you know, 30,000 servers from patching. We can just box these whatever servers need it and keep them out of the patching until, you know, after the, you know, the fold into the next patch cycle.
Okay. Yeah, no, it looks like a very standardized process at this point.
Yeah. And like I said, we built it up over time. We didn't start day one with all this stuff. We've always had maintenance windows, but I think, you know, back a long time ago, we had like three. And then we've heard, you know, as we've built up flexibility and added more, you know, just as basically, you know, we get comfortable doing something, then we go talk to the customers who aren't using it. And so that's part of what, you know, not only do we measure compliance, we do like to look and see which system people are using. So if they're not using automation, let's figure out why.
Right.
And then iterate on that and see if we can answer, you know, go back to them and say, okay, well, we solved this problem for you. And now can we, you know, use automation?
Mm-hmm. And you've gotten a lot of reception to it.
Correct. Yeah, a lot of it really started with Agent Health. I mean, number of years ago, we really didn't pay much attention to our agent health. It was not as robust, or maybe in the like high 80s, low 90s consistently. And so we did a lot of work around the service, stabilizing it, going after those really tough to solve sort of the last 10% kind of thing. And now we've hit 98% and kind of stay there. You know, definitely stay over 95 all the time, but it really fluctuates.
Especially
you're also chasing a moving target, too, because there's always more servers growing.
All right, so we have about 10 minutes, and we'll see if anyone on the call actually has a question. We'll just give a couple of seconds here. And meanwhile, while they are thinking of it, I just want on the screen, we actually have, you know, links which actually says how people can stay connected with experts like you, by the way. It's either you can follow us on Twitter, ask us a question on Facebook. And in fact, if there are any questions that come after, you know, after the session and you're thinking about it, feel free to send an email to, and I think the ID is on the very next screen, which is itlive@microsoft.com. And then we'll get back to you with answers through your account representative at that point in time. What we will do, and let's just give a couple of minutes for any outstanding questions, and if there aren't any, then we will quickly wrap up. So, but I hope you enjoyed.
I did, thank you. Yeah.
And there was a lot of information that was covered in here, no doubt.
Seems like there's a question.
Okay, so let's see, we actually had a question. All right, so do you also patch servers on Microsoft Azure? Actually, that's a very good question.
That is a good question, actually. We've recently started migrating a lot to Azure, and the method that we've migrated a lot of our servers up there, they're still corp connected to Azure, so we do patch them, but they really just kind of look like regular agents for us.
Oh, so you are able to patch, I mean, it could be a full service that's sitting on Azure, but you
Correct.
Can actually patch the service.
Yeah, I mean, we're moving them to a corp connected Azure instance, mm-hmm. so as far as config manager is concerned, they're just, you know, attached to our domain, and they show up as other agents. We are evaluating how we maybe migrate some of our config manager infrastructure into Azure so that those, you know, that the machines in Azure can get to resources in Azure instead of having to come back through the WAN and back up. But yeah, we've started moving. We've got, we're always moving stuff up to the cloud now, taking stuff on-prem, moving it up, but, you know, as those numbers get bigger, we'll probably have to figure out a more robust solution about putting machines up there.
So do you kind of know what percentage of a service that you're patching today is actually in the cloud?
I think it's roughly around 10, maybe 12, 15%, somewhere in that kind of range. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what we've really started moving, you know, building anything new in Azure, and then we're now working on tools to automate the moves of servers from on-prem into the cloud.
So we'll wait to see if there's any other question. But meanwhile, on just to add to that, we talked about some of the servers actually moving over to Azure. So in our environment, we also have unreleased software. I mean, we often
True.
Have
yeah.
a lot, you know, what we call internally as
right.
being the first and best customer. Does your process actually take care of patching any of what we call the dog food service?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. As much as we can with the whatever version of, you know, whatever, we're limited to whatever the config manager agent, the, you know, the released version, which is what we're running in production, mm-hmm. what it can understand as a platform. So, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a newer version of Windows, that may be something where we would go either have to get a hot fix from the product group just so that we can actually address those machines. We may have to just patch them manually and eat the cost of it, or patch them through another solution, maybe the orchestrator one, because it is agentless. It doesn't really have to, you know, interact with that. Or that's, you know, something where we would also be beta testing the next version of Config Manager at the same time, and we could, you know, attach those to there. So, but it is a definitely that always over the years always presented a challenge. You know, we're always running non-released versions against production versions, and we even have problems because we're limited to what the we take the public Windows Update catalog. Mm-hmm. So, if it doesn't have any patches built for a platform that hasn't been released, we may not be able to patch it there. Yeah, it's definitely a difficult piece.
So the focus is a lot on the release software, you know, the data yep. center machine. That's where you're looking at.
Yeah, but we definitely have to deal. It is a problem for us that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. All right. So again, there'll be a quick question that's coming up right there. At Microsoft IT, do you have independent config manager hierarchies for Windows workstations and Windows servers?
We do, actually. We have separated out the desktops from the servers for a number of reasons. You know, they technically could go together, but what we found is that it's, you know, we want to be able to set more aggressive policies in the data center. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like our desktop team, for example, has, you know, 500,000 desktops that they have to manage. Mm-hmm. And so they really can't put the policies up as fast as we wanted to. So, you know, it's certainly in Config Manager 2012, we probably, with some of the role-based access stuff and the way that you can break it up, we probably could come back together, but, mm-hmm. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense to actually to split the two up. So they're managed differently. You want to sort of minimize the footprint of risk that could be there for somebody actually deploying to the wrong thing and, you know, hitting the data center. But just being able to manage them differently. So yeah, we've split them out.
And do you actually share best practices between the two teams?
You know, we do. We meet with them every once in a while too. A little bit different though, because a lot of their best practices and ours don't translate together. I mean, for example, you know, they get the benefit of having a user they could right. nag and say, "Hey, we want to patch your machine." Like we have to do it completely headless in the middle of a maintenance window on a mm-hmm. server. So it's definitely two different animals, but we do share as much as we can.
All right, so we have another 3 minutes before the end of this session. So, first of all, I do want to thank you, Jeremy, for your time today. I mean, this was wonderful, a lot of information. Thank you so much. And I do want to get to the very next slide quickly as well. And I do want to thank everybody who actually attended the call as well. And I hope this has been really very valuable to you, because it definitely was, you know, a lot of good information for me as well. And so, as I said in the beginning, I mean, there's going to be a feedback request, and, you know, a link will be quickly posted to the IM window. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what your feedback is. And again, as I said, it's a monthly series, so there's going to be one again in January. And we'll have another expert like you, Jeremy, to talk about, again, the next, you know, the industry's hot topic. And in fact, something that's very, it's a popular request that we get sure. over here as well. So, and look forward to our next series, which is going to be in January. And with that, thank you once again.